Call from the Dáil on Kerry Today with John Downing.
Now, John Downing, good morning to you. Look, a very sad week on a number of levels this week with the passing of Micheál Muirchertach. His removal, his wake, it's underway at 11 o'clock this morning in Dingle. But also in the world of journalism, a remarkable journalist of incredible ability, Tommy Gorman, passing away as well.
Yes, a sad week, and it touched all facets of Irish life, including politics. I mean, let's recall that Micheál Muirchertach was at one stage in that strange year, 2011, the summer of 2011, they were talking about Micheál as a potential president of Ireland, and maybe that was an opportunity missed, you know. But the affection in every walk of life for Micheál, and how he touched most everybody's life, was extraordinary. And Tommy, there was Tommy Gorman, a great Sligo man. Micheál was of course a GAA man through and through. Tommy loved all sports, but he was principally a soccer man, devoted to Sligo Rovers, and for quite a long time the chairman of Sligo Rovers in later years. So yeah, a huge loss. Yeah.
And you knew him when you were out in Europe covering that. He went on to do a remarkable job as well, covering Northern Ireland and the process, the peace process, and the difficulties after that period as well.
Yes, absolutely. Tommy, I soldiered with him for 10 years in Brussels. A great man, a great companion. Very, very funny guy. Very thoroughly professional and dedicated to the job, but also a great friend and a great companion. And a very, very interesting take always on Northern Ireland. He used to say to me, "I'll mix nationalism with the best of them."
Yeah.
I'm Irish, but he had a unique take. I mean, you heard by that, it was replayed many times what he said on the Late Late Show. If we move towards a united Ireland, we must avoid making the Northern Unionists politically homeless. We have to. However we do it, we have to include them and bring them with us.
Yeah, which is a key point in the whole debate still to this day. John, look, we'll move on to matters domestic and international in terms of politics, and Mother of Sweet Divine, the US election debate last night. I don't know if you've heard much of the coverage. You don't have to hear much to see the outcome, or you don't even have to hear any of it, John, to see the narrative coming from columnists and analysts and news media all across the world as to whether Joe Biden needs to be replaced, to let you know how badly it went for the sitting president.
Yeah, he delivered a very shaky, halting performance, and you know, the big beast that is Donald, he battered him with a lot of falsity, I believe. But you know, there's a nastiness gone into our politics, Jerry, and the importance, particularly in the English-speaking world, of the tone that would be set by, you know, who is the president of the USA, is singularly important. But it's an extraordinary situation, because it's almost like they're picking popes. I mean, these are the two oldest presidential candidates ever, and they just exchange personal insults
Donald Trump was going about being able to hit a golf ball and boasting about winning two golf tournaments in his own. That was the level of debate. And Pascal Donoghue was asked about this morning in an interview, the Minister for Public Expenditure, and he pointed to the same thing you're saying. The coarseness of it, the level of how low it's gone, is not good news for anybody.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Biden is 81 years of age, but I mean, somehow or other, we've got to a situation where where Donald Trump is somehow able to portray himself as some kind of a garçon, age 77. You know, I mean, in any other walk of life, you know, that these people should be happily enjoying retirement, grandchildren, you know, bit of gardening, the odd game of golf, whatever. But they're going to lead the quote-unquote free world. I mean, it's not encouraging, Jerry. You know, I mean, really.
No, it certainly is, whatever way you cut it up or you slice it up. John, from the point of view of our own matters this week, Aer Lingus, continuing fallout from the Aer Lingus strike. Trading, you know, it reminded me of going back to the 1980s to an extent and the early 90s we had collective bargaining. This is a real old-fashioned personal dispute between personalities on either side trading blows, and all the while the poor holiday goer or the tourist operator is suffering.
The ghost of Pat Sweeney down our side of the country in the southwest. I think from memory, Pat Sweeney, long time industrial correspondent of RTE, a Kerryman reporter, Corkman reporter, used to do these kind of disputes with great aplomb, and it is a real throwback to the 1970s, 1980s. It has huge political ramifications, because here we have a situation where the primary schools, the national schools have just closing for the holidays, and many, many people want to go on their holidays, and they've saved a few bob, they've hit the credit union, whatever it is, they've saved it, they've borrowed it, they want to go, and they can't. And that has huge political fallout. But I don't know what, you know, what the politicians can do. We are a long way from the days of Bertie Ahern as Minister for Labour Affairs suddenly intervening. We have a very sophisticated industrial relations mechanism, but they have tried, the Labour Court and its offshoots have tried to deal with this for 20 odd months, and it has failed them, and it's very hard to see where this one is going to go. It's going to get worse before it gets better. We're an island. You're talking about Kerry. Kerry is already hurting, as are many places on the western seaboard, before the missed opportunities of tourism. And you know, it's going to escalate very quickly, and one thing is going to borrow another. Hopefully all strikes in the end are resolved, but this one's going to have to burn itself quite an awful lot more brightly before anything is going to happen.
Yeah, and is there anything else that the Taoiseach or anyone else can say? Heather Humphreys was talking about it yesterday and was raising the doll again yesterday, saying, look, they need to get into a room, they need to sit down, they need to sort it out. Or does it have to get really bad before a politician has to steps in and make something happen?
Well, you see, the difficulty for a politician is to try and move in and do something. You know, they risk making things worse, or being seen, in fairness to politicians, they risk being seen to have made things worse.
Yeah.
The point here is, I mean, you have Sinn Féin, Martin Kenny, transport spokesman, saying the Taoiseach needs to get right in there. And then when he's further coursed on that question, he comes over all woolly pretty promptly, because he can't specifically say what anyone can do here. The other point, and I'm pretty confident this is happening, that the back channels, the secret back channels, are being worked. by government politicians. Of course, they can't say that here and now because, you know, by definition, if they're to be any good, they have to remain secret. But there you are, you know.
Okay, well, John, we're going to talk more about what's happened this week. But inside and outside the Dáil, the exit of Michael McGrath, a step up for Jack Chambers, and the return, the full return, really, of Darragh Cleary. We'll get to that after we take these.
Call from the Dáil on Kerry Today with John Downing.
Now, John, Michael McGrath, the worst-known secret in Irish politics, heading off to a commission position with the European Union. Micheál Martin, on the 19th of June, appointed Jack Chambers, Fianna Fáil's deputy leader. A mere 7 days later, he was appointed as Minister for Finance. Incredible stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. 33 years of age, Jack Chambers. As of now, is sort of the coming young man, Ireland's youngest Minister for Finance since Michael Collins. As there's some accolade, what could possibly go wrong? All he has to do now is fix funding for RTE by the end of before the summer holidays, and then. He has basically kind of 3 months to produce a budget for the 8th of October next. And that budget basically has to be an election manifesto for Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, maybe not the Greens, maybe the Greens, as a re-election sort of hymn sheet. And then... it also has to somehow stack up as appearing prudent rather than as much as an election giveaway. It's a high wire walk for him. A Mayo background, Dublin West TD since 2016, new in politics, incredibly likeable, apparently very, very decent man. But big shoes to fill.
A big test. And is there any part of this from Micheál Martin? Is it appointing a successor? Or is Micheál leaving? Or does he want to be president? Or are all those questions unanswered? And is there a point here in terms of future strategy for the party that if it was to be a leader, or if this to be appointment, that it's important you have a Dublin leader after so many years of Cork being in the front seat in Fianna Fáil?
Yeah, I would say, Gerry, yes to all of those points you make. Micheál Martin has an opportunity to be Taoiseach again. Not clear, but he has that opportunity. And I think that is his primary concentration right now. But yes, he is pointing the way to a future for the Fianna Fáil party. He has been a very good and a very successful Taoiseach, particularly through COVID and other things. He has impressed, he has grown into the job. I'll be very honest, I was doubtful about Micheál Martin sometimes as a minister. I thought he was very disappointing, for example, as Minister for Health in the boom years. But he has been a very good Taoiseach. He could be Taoiseach again. It's not clear how that ball is going to bounce. But he has been criticised by activists and loyalists in Fianna Fáil for not executing his duty of care to the party. I think he has shown some vision here. It's a risk. He has taken a risk given a relatively young, relatively inexperienced person, the second biggest job in Irish politics. And we shall see what we shall see. Certainly he's a Jack Chambers is a potential future party leader, and if they're going to do it where there is one third of the population in and around Dublin, well then you have to go where the action is.
You do. And John, look, from that, Michael McGrath has to try and get a decent portfolio. Will that be harmed by the Ursula von der Leyen situation. A listener wants to know, would you ask John Downing to assess the political implications of the four Fianna Fáil MEPs voting against Ursula von der Leyen?
Yeah, it's not helpful. She did infuriate an awful lot of people by being leaning far too much, as the Germans do, for historic reasons, legacy of remorse and regret, leaning far too much towards Israel in the conflict in Gaza, and doing things which many people in the EU machine felt she had exceeded her authority. Yeah. As president of the policy guiding European Commission, this has led the likes of Billy Kelleher and Barry Andrews and the two newcomers Barry Cohn, Cynthia Ni Wurchu, to say, look, we couldn't possibly vote for this woman to give her another 5 years at the EU helm. That doesn't really help the big effort that's being mobilised to try to get Michael McGrath a post of some
significance.
Yeah, politically.
Yeah, he has all his political skill to try and survive that one and get a good portfolio out of it.
Absolutely. And then there's also the issue. There's the gender issue made very clear yesterday that Ursula von der Leyen is obliged to try to have some kind of gender balance, to have some almost as many women as men in the commission, and she has asked for two names. She probably will. What helps Ireland at this point is they've got their retaliation in first. They've named Michael McGrath and said, look, that is our person, that's that. But and she hasn't quite got her legs under the table yet, because she has a very difficult parliament vote to go to. But it would be helpful if the four Fianna Fáil MEPs could turn around and say, look, all things being equal, we're going to back Ursula von der Leyen for another 5 years, because we need continuity and stability.
Yeah. Okay, John, finally and briefly, a listener wants to know, why did Mary Lou abstain in the Migration Pact vote during the week? This is a contentious vote. There'll be more issues out of it, I would imagine, but it got passed in the Dáil, 79-72.
This goes to the fault line currently in Sinn Féin. They are very conflicted on this issue, and part of their difficulty in the local and European elections is that they've been outflanked by particularly hard right independents. Abstaining, it always looks like pretty poor stuff, sitting on the fence, not doing something, but it just epitomises Sinn Féin's difficulty on the question of migration.
Yeah, it certainly is, and we'll see where that one goes from there. John, I hope you pay your TV licence. We'll have to talk about this one next week, because we're out of time. Pascal Singh is going to cost 130 million. There's a row brewing, but we'll get to that one next week. But tell me at least that you pay it, John.
I do have to pay it, I'll tell you. I do. It'd be very embarrassing if I was caught. That's my thought. The other point about that is we can definitely talk about RTE next week, Jerry, because RTE, as our Lord said about the poor, RTE is always going to be with us. It's our special problem child.
It certainly is. It's a story that refuses to go away. John, great stuff. Thanks a million. We'll talk about RTE and other things this time next week. John Downing there with call from the Dáil. If you have a view on what he had to say, we'd love to hear from you in the programme. Much more on the way after we take these.